and welcome to the Buyer Insights Podcast, a show about how and why people buy. I'm your host, Liston Witherell, CEO of GoodFunnel, a digital marketing agency. You can check us out on the web at goodfunnel.co. You can listen to all episodes of the Buyer Insights Podcast at goodfunnel.co/podcast, and you can grab the show notes from this episode there as well. Today, I'm very excited to have Michael Agard, Senior Conversion Optimizer over at Unbounce. You may be familiar with his work. He also wrote a blog called Content Verve. And Michael is a very, very knowledgeable conversion rate optimizer. And what that means is it's a very fancy way of saying that he applies the scientific method to online marketing. What he looks to do is increase conversion rates, or at least understand more about his customers and why things are working or not working. Today we cover a lot of ground, and Michael talks all about how he works at Unbounce, his process, his methods, how to do customer research, and he has a really interesting book recommendation that I think we're going to hear come up a lot on this show. So without further ado, here is Michael. Liston here with GoodFunnel, and I am here with Michael Agard from Unbounce. How are you, Michael?
I am very good. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. I'm really excited to have you here today. And I know a lot about you because you've written a ton about conversion rate optimization. And here at GoodFunnel, we write a lot of copy, and so I know that's something that you're very attuned to. But before I go on and on gushing about you, can you give the listeners a little bit of background on yourself and how you got to be at Unbounce?
Certainly. So I basically got started with all this online stuff, eight or nine years ago now? It was kind of by coincidence. My background is actually interpretation and translation. That's my master's degree from Copenhagen Business School. But I pretty quickly found out that I didn't want to be a translator because that kind of sucks. And I just got this kind of freelance job as a copywriter at an online agency as a SEO stuff. And it immediately caught my attention because there was actually something here where you could like use words and communication to change behavior. And then I spent about a year doing SEO copywriting. They hired me full time. And then I just kind of got sick of throwing traffic at websites because in most cases, nothing really happened. So the customers were just paying us to drive a lot of traffic, but they weren't making money. And so I was like, there must be a better way. And then I got into, I got interested in kind of what happens after you get traffic to a website. And then that kind of led into the whole CRO thing. I decided to go off on my own, do my own thing. As a solo career. And then, I was afraid of a friend of Unbounce for a long time. I used the product from day one. And then at some point they needed, a CRO guy, and they approached me and asked if I join. And it's probably the best decision I've made in my life. I'm very, 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 very happy to be part of Unbounce. And not least living in Vancouver, which is the most incredible city in the world, in my opinion.
All right. And I think a little bit warmer than your last home, if I remember correctly.
Kind of. I mean, actually, the weather it's pretty similar in Denmark and Vancouver. It's a little bit warmer here, and one of the big advantages is that there's very little wind here compared to Denmark. So, for example, the rain comes straight down. In Denmark, it always come at you sideways with 120 kilometers an hour. So it feels a lot nicer over here.
Well, I live in Portland, Oregon, so we have almost identical climates, the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You get a lot of rain, but you also get those glorious sunny days.
We do. It is very nice. So going back to kind of your past with copy and then focusing on CRO, you've spent a ton of time learning about customers and make them understanding what makes them tick, right? That's the kind of the main thing we want to cover on the podcast, and is understanding how and why people make decisions to buy or even run away scared, right? Because we know that happens a lot, no matter how successful you are. So, what in your experience, what is the biggest mistake people make in learning about their customers?
Well, this might sound stupid, but I think the biggest mistake is that they don't really learn about their customers. I've seen this a lot. It kind of depends on the business. I also think there's kind of a couple of maybe a newer generation of marketers, and I think there's an older generation maybe of them a little bit more like Mad Men, kind of Don Draper-ish types, where it's kind of like this assumption that you
you as the marketer, whatever, you know, you're the genius and you can tell the future, and you know, you have this uncanny ability to sense in others what they want before they blah blah blah, all that stuff. And then maybe there are people out there who can do that. I've never met one. I can't do it myself. So I think that's, to me, a bizarre way of doing this stuff. I was at a conference recently where there was a guy doing this big talk about, you know, how to be customer centric, and at no point in that whole talk did he mention the fact that you can actually involve your customers in your marketing process or in research.
That's ironic.
So that's what I mean. Yeah, it really is, and I think a lot of marketers have this weird kind of this kind of snobbish attitude. Is like, no, we're supposed to figure this out. I'll just talk to the other marketers, and we'll figure it out. And I think that's a huge mistake, and I think it's very arrogant. You can spend 4 hours in a room with other marketers philosophizing about what your customers want, or you could spend those 4 hours actually talking to your customers and figuring it out. So I'd say that's the biggest mistake, is actually having this weird kind of mental block almost in relation to actually going out there and doing real research and actually getting in contact with the people you're trying to sell stuff to.
Yeah. So how do you even approach that in the first place? I know that it really varies depending on the business that we're talking about, right? So I would learn about my e-commerce customer is very different than how I would learn about a consulting client.
I mean, the nature of the beast is different, but for me, the approach would be very similar, though, the approach itself. And I think just to add to what I was saying before, also, I think there's a level of confirmation bias, you know, in all of us. Unless you actively make an effort to change it, you're going to automatically assume a lot of things. And a lot of those assumptions are going to be based on how you perceive the world. And that's a big mistake as well. If you're a marketer who assumes that you can tell the future and whatever, and you at the same time base a lot of this on your own opinions, that's really, really thin ice you're skating on. Then it's really dangerous. But as far as doing, my approach would be, whenever I'm discussing something with another marketer, or you're trying to launch a campaign, or you're trying to do any project, as soon as possible I try to see if I can get my hands on something that will give me some insight, some data that will help me understand how potential customers think. So that could be as simple as diving into Google Analytics. People go, this page, how are we going to make it better, for example? And I say, well, let's just quickly ask Google Analytics, and then you could go to your navigation summary, for example, and see, okay, so what page do people go to after the page we're talking about right now? Everybody, 90%, if they don't, exit the website, they go to pricing. Well, that's an indication that they're pretty interested in pricing. Aha, then we already have a little nugget there. We have a signal from our users of what they are looking to do. So something as simple as that. But another technique I use a lot is something as old school as interviews, and I worked with a lot of different verticals when I was a consultant, and I would use pretty much the same approach regardless. I mean, you know, get me some phone time with some real customers. Let me talk to them. I have a set of questions I can share. And another thing is to talk to the people in sales and talk to the people in support. They have accumulated knowledge. They spend every single day, all day, talking to customers. So in many cases, I start there, actually, before I start to customers, talking to the customers themselves. And for sales, you know, they have people on the phone all day, so they know the right arguments, which arguments work well, which don't, what are the biggest concerns, what are the main questions, and so on. So something as simple as asking what are the main questions you get when people call you, when customers call you, or potential customers call you, you know, those three questions, if they're calling to ask about those, it means that we're not answering them online. So that's a signal right there. And then I'd ask, for example, as a follow-up question, I'd ask the person I'm talking to in customer success or sales, I say, aha, so what do you answer when you get those questions? And that's gold, pure gold. And then I start writing down, because the answers that they give, they've refined those answers over maybe months and years. So that goes straight to the landing page or whatever afterwards. So that's kind of top-level stuff.
In your experience on this note of getting voice of customer data from sales, from customer success, How often do you gather that data and then find out that the marketing or the sales collateral is not even aligned with the institutional knowledge?
So I'm in-house now, full-time with Unbound. So that is, and that's the first time I've really been that, just because I used to be a consultant. So it's kind of a little bit of a new thing for me, because it means that I can spend all my time on Unbound, right? And I'm going to be there for a long time. So I can actually start to do stuff like that, do regular check-ins. But I mean, with project-based, I would in most cases only like do it once initially, because I would be kicking off projects and helping people get started. But otherwise, I mean, I think it makes sense if you're touching upon. I would start by doing like kind of baseline, broad interviews with sales and support, for example, and then I might go back and ask specific kind of niche questions, depending on if maybe we're digging into a particular product or a particular aspect or a particular campaign. I might have questions that pertain exactly to that one, but I think the main thing is of course it makes sense to check in. Basically, whenever I kick something off at Unbounce, for example, one of the first things I do is I talk to, you know, customer support, because they spend so much time on there. So I in most cases I assume that they will have something to contribute to whenever I have like a dark area where I need right. to understand more.
And so that information you gather will then become kind of the guidance about what additional research, if any, do you need to do directly with customers, right?
Yes, totally. So I'd say those interviews are really, really interesting as far as you know, on a top level, kind of like figuring out, okay, so this is how this seems to be the things that people are most interested in. This seems to be how they feel. This seems to be what they like best, what they like least. This seems to be what they understand, what they don't understand. And then that will kind of give you a especially if you have, for example, for Unbounce, we're a SaaS company, so we basically have one product, right? We don't have a million different ones. We have one product. So that really helped me initially. One of the things I found out when I joined Unbounce, for example, was that people confused us with Optimizely, and we're two very different products. But people were like, one of the main questions was, what is the difference between you and Optimizely? It's like, wow. I mean, if people have gone through a website and they don't know what the difference is, that's crazy. That's a huge hurdle. Because Unbounce is a platform for building landing pages primarily, and then we have built-in A/B testing. Optimizely is A/B testing software, right? Now they're doing personalization, but at the time I'm talking about now is straight up A/B testing. So if people didn't understand that essential difference, that's a massive problem, right? So I did some follow-up testing, for example, where I did some different 5-second tests, they're called. It's a usability test where you upload a screenshot, you recruit a panel, you show the screenshot for 5 seconds, then you ask questions. What I found out was, as soon as we had A/B testing in the headline, you know, people got confused, because that's such a buzzword. It's just they see that and go, oh, it's A/B testing. As soon as I took that out, people were like, oh, they build landing pages. So just a little thing like that is to me a massive breakthrough. And figuring that stuff out is to me much, much more interesting than testing button color or, you know, whatever backgrounds or whatever stupid stuff you could figure out. This is like the real chunky stuff. This is the thing. This kind of research that can really transform a business, in my experience.
Yeah, definitely. That's been our experience too. Basically, any amount of customer research we do is far superior to none, obviously.
Yeah.
And once we start supplementing quantitative data with qualitative data, actually talking to people and hearing what they say, and also the actual language that they use becomes really, really important. Now, someone listening to this may start to think, sounds great, Michael, you work for Unbounce, you guys have lots of resources, you have all the time in the world to do this, but I don't have time for that. So what would you say to someone who thinks that research takes way too much time and they just don't have time to incorporate it in their workflow?
I say I empathize and I completely understand why people would think that. And in some cases it can, you know, take massive amounts of time. I think it's, But I would say that is absolutely not true. You can do a lot of research, you know, in a very short amount of time. You just have to plan it well, and you have to know what you're doing. And also, I think you have to be agile, because one of the things I've experienced with clients also is people tend, once they kind of
figure out that there's maybe one, you know, one technique or method that's really effective, then they go like, okay, we have to do that all the time. Which I think is a misconception. Like people go, okay, split testing is valuable. Okay, split test everything all the time. No, 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 no. You might not even have enough traffic. It doesn't make sense. Or, oh, we did that usability test and had great examples. Now we have to usability test everything we do. It's like, no, 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 no. We have a box of tools, and depending on, you know, the case in front of us and the time, you know, we have and the samples we can get a hold of, you know, we adjust accordingly. So I would say, like, one of the standard pieces of work I would do, regardless of, almost regardless of traffic, though, is I would set aside 4 hours, and then I would start with a little bit of quantitative research first. And I loved your point before that the two go hand in hand, because they're really, they both have to be there. And I think online we have a tendency to focus, you know, like almost only or almost exclusively on qualitative stuff. Quantitative, because we have such easy access to data. But, you know, those are really those quantitative stuff answers where and what questions. Why you have to turn to qualitative to get that. So I would start by going, just doing a little bit of digging in analytics. I try to, depending on whether it's a landing page or a whole website, you know, I try to get some, I try to understand a little bit about the traffic patterns. How much traffic do we have? Do we have enough to even consider split testing down the road? For example, device mix, you know, kind of just to have an understanding of what's going on here. Like, what is the split? Are we seeing 99% traffic from desktop? What is it like? Then I'd look at conversions also. In many cases, you'll see perhaps, you know, a huge conversion rate on desktop, not on mobile, all the way around. You really have to have an understanding of what's going on. Maybe go through some browser compatibility issues. I try to look at the main landing pages. I try to carve out like the main footfall, right? So it might be typical in e-commerce, you have a home page, then you have product page, then have a category page, product page, basket, and then the whole, you know, checkout funnel. I try to do a manual funnel there, see where are people dropping off, stuff like that. So if you know what you're doing there with Google Analytics, for example, you could do that in, I'd say, an hour. You could get all that stuff I just talked about now. It's just plowing through it. It'll give you a pretty good idea of what's going on top level. It'll help you start to isolate some problem areas. Then after that, there's a couple of different things you could do. You could start with the interviews. I do that a lot. It'll take you a little bit of time maybe to get a hold of the people you want to talk to. But the interviews themselves, you can execute them in about 5 to 20 minutes a pop. I have like a framework with 5 questions, very easy to go through. That will give you a better understanding. And then after that, you could start doing, for example, session recording. If it's, you know, when you're doing your funnel analysis, you figure out where people are dropping off. You set up session recording so you can start to record every single session. That's qualitative right there, because you're actually seeing how people are interacting with your page. You're trying to figure out what the problem is. I figured out with Unbounce, for example, we had a massive drop off on step one in our checkout funnel. One of the things I figured out was there was absolutely no communication that you have to give up your credit card information. It just said, you know, step one, put in 4 pieces of information and start your trial. When you click start your trial, 13 surprise fields and credit card, and people just fled the website there. So that, you know, you dig in and figure that stuff out. So these are different layers you can put on there. Another thing I use a lot is, for example, well, heat maps and stuff like that, but especially scroll maps, I think are very, really interesting as far as how people are interacting, scrolling with the page. And something that I love using for qualitative insight is our feedback polls. In Kuala Lumpur has these hot jar, you get them all over the place, but they're these very, very kind of discreet, not very intrusive on-page surveys that are perfect for answering, for example, one question and getting one answer. It could be, for example, what is most important to you? And then you have 3 options, right? Is it e-commerce? It could be like, is it whatever, free shipping? Is it, you know, saving money, or is it a third thing? You know, then, because then based on what you heard from the interviews, then you can actually start nailing it on that one page. You go, aha, we know this overall, but I wonder what is, and then you get the nuances there. So use feedback polls kind of as a sniper tool to get very, very specific insight without bothering people very much. So kind of what I'm getting at here is you layer this stuff on, you know, and you fill in the blanks by doing this. And I would say of the different techniques I mentioned right now, if you, assuming that, you know, you have something like Hotjar, you know, implemented on your website or whatever, going through everything I talked about here, and of course not calculating the time it'll take you to get, you know, response from the people who want an interview, you could do all this stuff I'm talking about now in, you could easily do it in 4 hours.
Right.
That's 4 hours, man. That's so little. And my point again is that people are like, oh, I have to do it up front. I'm saying, I know it's a hassle. And sometimes you can get away with just guessing. But the problem is if you guess wrong, and there's a high likelihood you're going to guess wrong, then you're back to square one. You have absolutely no idea because you just guessed. If you put in the 4 hours and do all this research up front, chances are that you're going to, you know, make better decisions are very high. You know, there's a very high likelihood that that's going to happen. And another thing is, even if when, because a lot of this is probably not going to work anyways because you executed it wrong, you still have, you know, a lot of insight and data. So you can go, aha, we had all this pointing to this solution. It wasn't the right solution. So let's go back and backtrack it. It's just much more... It's a much more solid process, right? And also, if you're a consultant, then you're in a much stronger situation because you can show all the work you did to the client, right? Instead of just standing there and they go, "Why didn't this work? I don't know. Why did you do this? I don't know. Why did you think it would work? Ah, I just had the assumption because usually it does. Okay, why didn't it work? I don't know. What are you going to do now? I guess some more, right?
Some more of what? Different. Of course.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I would say it's just a question of getting into this. It sounds so boring, but it's actually a lot of fun. And if you have a couple of success experiences with it, you know, it's really about getting in there and doing it, getting experience, having a couple of aha experiences, and then making it part of your culture, I'd say.
Yeah, I think for us, what we've seen is as soon as we can show a client, even a small win, if we can go out, collect some data and go, oh, look at that, 20% increase on this page that you haven't touched in 3 years because you thought there was absolutely no way you could do more with it, or you were lazy, or you just never thought about it, or there were other priorities, whatever it is. I think once people experience that first small win, they start to go, oh, yeah, we should be doing more of this.
Totally. And I've mentioned this so many times before, I'm going to mention it again, is I love the Abraham Lincoln quote, you know, give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'll spend the first 4 sharpening the axe.
Right.
I use that analogy a lot because I think that's what we do with research, you know. And then to completely exaggerate, I'd say, you know, I think what I used to do and what I think a lot of marketers do is the equivalent of, like, you know, running blindfolded through the woods with a dull axe, just hacking away and hoping that at some point you're going to hit something that may or may not be a tree, right? And with research, what we're doing, we're sharpening the axe because we're kind of trying to set us up to win, right? We're setting us up and trying, you know, to put ourselves in a situation where we can chop down the tree on the first try. And to me, that just makes so much more sense. And I used to call myself a split test junkie, which is really, really silly, and I didn't really understand how to do split testing. And I think that's another problem I see a lot is people go like, oh, we'll just test it. Like, no, that's silly. I mean, most of the tests I run, even for Unbounce, they run a month before I have a sample that's, you know, representative and will give me solid data. So a month, you know, that means on any given page you have 12 shots a year. So you better make those count. We don't have time to, you know, fart around with weird things like, oh, I wonder what would happen if we moved this over here and that over there, right?
Yeah, so I'm going to put you on the spot now. Before we started recording, you mentioned that at Unbounce you've been doing some work on your AdWords account and that recently you've seen a success. So I was hoping you could walk us through, what was your hypothesis going in? What changes did you make and what have you seen as a result of it?
Well, one of the interesting things, so this isn't quite cooked now, so I'm going to be a little bit abstract about what I'm talking about, but based on the first 2 weeks here, the first 14 days, we see some really, really strong strong results here. So AdWords, of course, is an important source for us of traffic. We see a high lifetime value of the leads that come through there. And we, you know, AdWords is pretty awesome in general, I'd say. But one of the things that I haven't gotten around to helping the PPC team with is like having a systematic approach to optimizing the ads. And rather than kind of just, you know, tweak stuff and hope it works based on kind of my assumptions, I did what I've been advocating here is I interviewed six of our customers, our like ideal customers, the segment that we really, really want. And I, you know, one of the main things I wanted to figure out was like, is what is the problem you're trying to solve with Unbounce, with our product, right? And what are the top three, you know, benefits? What does he want to get out of Unbounce, really? And again, this is highly qualitative stuff. So you might say, five customers, that's nothing. But again, I'm not looking at huge sample sizes. I'm looking at signals. And basically, all five of these customers said the same things. So already there, we're seeing, okay, there might be something here. So basically, what I did then is I took the two main things that they wanted out of Unbounce, the two like the main problem and the main things they wanted to get out of there, and turn that into a headline on the new extended ad format that Unbounce has. And we haven't been able to really get that to perform better. We've done a lot of tests with that format, but for this one, all of a sudden we're seeing a conversion rate that is almost three times as high, and then we're not talking click through, we're talking conversion here to an actual account, right? And we're seeing a conversion rate that's over 6%, and we're seeing a cost per conversion that's around 40 now for this one. So that's a lot better than anything we've ever done before. And again, this is kind of, you know, to me, a very, very logical process, right? We say, let's talk to the customers. Let's figure out what it is that they want. Let's put that, front and center in our ads. And lo and behold, we're actually seeing a lower click-through rate on that one, but we're seeing a much higher conversion rate. So it looks like we're segmenting, the people we actually get through here based on the people who are actually going to, the right people and the ones who are actually going to sign up and stay with us.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because one thing we've seen is typically in lead gen, a lot of people look at it as, you know, let's just get the highest number of leads through. And what we often say is, well, wait a minute, shouldn't we be focused on quality? We want the people who will actually buy from you. We don't just want a high volume of leads.
No, exactly. No, I agree 100%. And that's why also to me, I mean, it's, you'll hear people say like, oh, click-through rate is the most important thing. And I'm like, I would really, really, really argue against that, right? And here's a great example. You know, the other ads have click-through rates that are much higher, but this one has a much higher conversion rate and a much, much, much lower cost per conversion. And that to me is by far more valuable than than just getting a lot of clicks that don't turn into money. And in my experience, the same with call to action buttons and whatever, it's not too difficult to get more people to click. It's more the difficult part is, you know, getting people to actually follow through.
Right.
Right. Because a click is just a click, you know, to be honest. And that's another dangerous thing I see with people just measuring the wrong things when they're running A/B tests, for example. So you're saying you're looking at click through rate, and then you don't know that actually down the line, you know, it's getting a lot worse.
Very good. So, Michael, you've definitely covered a lot of ground here, and you've definitely spent a lot of time thinking about these problems and understanding how to better address customer needs and collect data to do it. What is the one book you recommend people should read in order to kind of get into this mindset?
This might sound like a weird answer, to be honest, but Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. If you haven't read that book, it's absolutely incredible. He won a Nobel Prize for it. Psychology, absolutely a fantastic book. I think there's a lot of kind of hocus-pocus psychology out there, especially in relation to online stuff. And his book, it does not directly – he didn't write this about online psychology. This is human psychology, but – I'd say everything in this book is directly applicable to what we're doing in online marketing. And kind of what it goes back to is I've been on the road with a talk at conferences lately. And so the newest talk I have is actually all about Kahneman stuff with psychology and how we can use that online. But one of the main things he gets at, and you'll see this basically in all modern psychology, they go back to not referencing him, but referencing what he's talking about, the fact that humans, you know, with a very high likelihood, have two fundamentally different modes of thinking, like one very intuitive and one analytical, right? So the intuitive mode is basically autopilot, and it means that we can do a lot of stuff at the same time. We can multitask. And then the analytical mode is one we have to switch on. It's difficult for us, and it takes a lot of energy. It burns sugar. We get tired. We get depleted with any kind of analytical thinking. And the interesting thing there is the balance between the two, and also that we have a very, very limited capacity for analytical thinking. So that means that in relation to marketing and conversion stuff, for example, a lot of it is about keeping people over in the intuitive mindset, the intuitive mode of thinking, because that is connotated with good feelings and autopilot. So really what my overall point would be, what we're trying to do is we're trying to build like conversion or marketing experiences that facilitate cognitive ease, that keep you over in the unstrained, you know, mode of thinking. So, but what happens in a lot of cases with most, I'd say, websites and conversion experiences is that you're constantly forced over into the analytical mindset, because a lot of it is not logical, doesn't make sense, it makes you think. This is also going back to the Steve Krug's brilliant book, Don't Make Me Think. Kahneman kind of has the explanations as to why you have to try to not make people think. So basically every single time I have to turn on my analytical engine, it's basically the equivalent of pain. You know, it makes you angry, it makes you frustrated, it makes you burn sugar, it makes you hungry, it makes you hangry and all that stuff. So I'd say that book has fundamentally changed the way I work, really, because it's given me some very, very kind of specific, I guess, rules of thumb that I can use. And I see that in my own behavior all the time. You know, in many cases, you're zipping along on autopilot, you have all these weird assumptions, or you have this logic built into your own system about how the world works. You have these expectations, for example, when you click a banner and whatever. And if those expectations are not met in a logical fashion, and they don't, you know, have a logical progression, yeah, that's going to lead to a lot of frustration. So that whole book is incredible, and it just gives you a very, very, very practical kind of, I'd say, almost framework for building logical, delightful experiences. And that book is the best thing I've done for myself in a long time, reading that.
Fantastic. Yeah, and on this note of reducing cognitive load, there's another book on that specific topic called The Paradox of Choice, Why More is Less by Barry Schwartz.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so I really highly recommend that one. Stumbling on Happiness, also by Dan Gilbert, has got a few elements of that as well. So thank you, Michael, so much for being here. I'm really excited that you were so open sharing your experience and sharing everything you know. Where can people find you if they want to follow up with you?
You can contact me through Unbound. Just if you have any questions or anything, you can shoot me an email, michael.agard at unbounce.com. I recently kind of elected to retire my blog, and I'm just going to do a kind of a simple one-page website for now. I don't really have time to blog a lot, and also I feel like a lot of the things I was talking about on the blog go many years back and are not quite representative of what I believe in the way I work now. Mm-hmm. So otherwise, there's Twitter, Content Verve. We could put in a link for that. And feel free to connect.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here, Michael.
Thank you.